Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome everyone to today's Policy Update webinar. My name is David Olive. I'm Vice President of Policy Development Support and have the pleasure of working with a team of wonderful professionals that will be presenting to you the latest developments in policy at ICANN in preparation for our meeting in Durban, South Africa. And so we also would like to welcome participants who are on the call from Africa, and we look forward to working with our colleagues from the region at the ICANN meeting, either in person or remotely. We are looking forward to our visit there. Before I start, I just would like to say that we're trying again our new format that we initiated last time before the Beijing meeting. That is to say, we will break up the various presentations and allow a few questions after each of the sections dealing with either the GNSO or the CCNSO, and we will have you do that as well, and we will unmute the lines at that time. Of course, if you'd like to ask a question in between all that, or if that should come up that you want to raise a point, please put it in the chat, and we'll try to answer that and get back to you either soon thereafter, or again, at the end of the session, you'll still be able to ask a few questions as well. So we'd like to proceed from there. Today, of course, we are looking at, and our team supports, the policy development process at ICANN. And the various supporting organizations, both the generic names, the country code names, and the addressing support groups, draft and suggest recommendations to the board on various policies and practices for the DNS. In that role, of course, we also have advice on policy and other matters to the board of directors from our advisory committees. And you see them here listed, our at large, our security, stability, and advisory group, our root server systems advisors, and of course, the government advisory committee. I'd like to show this diagram, which talks about a visual look at our ICANN system and indeed how we try to engage all stakeholders in our policy development process at ICANN, as well as our other activities that you see here on our slide. The goal of this session, of course, as we do before each ICANN meeting, is to try to present some current work that's being discussed in Durban, and I encourage you to participate in those activities. We'll review those plans and programs for Durban, inform you on the upcoming initiatives, as well as opportunities for public comment and your inputs, and answer any questions you might have after each of the presentations. We will focus on, of course, the supporting organizations, as they are developers of policy recommendations for ICANN, but also some of the activities that relate to policy and other matters of the advisory committees in our presentations. The topics covered today are as follows here for the generic name supporting organization. The list is here for you to read, and our experts will be talking more about all of them. For the country code supporting organizations, the lists including some of their PDPs on IDNs. It's also the 10th anniversary of the CCNSO, an important milestone for a large member of our ICANN community. At the at-large advisory group, some of their activities since the Beijing meeting and their events in Durban. And finally, the root server advisory committee is undergoing some restructuring, and we'll hear a little bit more about that to strengthen their role within our ICANN community. With that, I turn it over to Marika Konings, our senior policy director and team leader for the GNSO, to talk about activities and policy developments in the GNSO. Marika, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, David. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. So I'll be briefly looking at some of the GNSO projects that are currently ongoing. As you can see from this list, there actually are many activities ongoing in the GNSO at the moment. We focused our part of the presentation on those items that are where there either is a decision imminent, there's currently an opportunity to provide input, or where we actually have a call for volunteers open. And maybe just a note as well that all GNSO working groups are open for anyone interested to participate in. And at the end of our section, we'll also briefly review some of those activities that are currently ongoing, but where there's no immediate milestone coming up. So first off, I'll be covering the thick who is policy development process. So for those of you that are may not be as familiar with who is as some of the others, see some very familiar names on the participant list. WHOIS requirements are currently specified in the registry and registrar agreements that ICANN has with our contracted parties. There are currently two models that are being used by GTLD registries to meet these requirements. One of them is known as the thin WHOIS model, and in that model, it's the registry only collects the information that's associated with the domain name, and that includes, for example, the information on the sponsoring registrar, the status of the registration, creation and expiration dates for each registration, the name server data, the last time the record was updated in the registry database, as well as the URL for the registrar's WHOIS service. In the thin model, the registrars maintain the data that's associated with the registrant of the domain name, and they provide that via their own WHOIS services. So currently, actually, .jobs.com and .net operates under such a thin model. The other model is known as thick WHOIS, and in that model, the registry collects both sets of data, so both the data set that's associated with the domain name as well as that of that is associated with the registrant. They collect that from the registrar and in turn publish that data via their WHOIS. So from some of the other discussions that have been taking place in the GNSO, it became obvious that, for example, if you look at it from a transfer perspective, thick WHOIS would have a lot of advantages, as the identity of the registrant of the domain name would be known by both the registry as well as the registrar. But there was also a realization that there may be other factors that would need to be considered in order to determine whether thick WHOIS should be required for all generic top-level domains. And as a result, the GNSO Council initiated a policy development process on this topic in March of 2012. And so where does this project currently stand? The working group has actually now published its report for public comment. And as a preliminary recommendation, the working group is recommending that thick WHOIS should become a requirement for all GTLD registries. So how have they come to this conclusion? Its charter actually outlined a number of issues that would need to be considered in order to make the determination whether a requirement for thick WHOIS would be beneficial or not. And as such, the working group considered issues such as data protection and privacy, stability, data escrow, accessibility, cost implications, synchronization, and a number of other topics. And based on their analysis of these topics, on balance, the working group concluded that there are actually more benefits than disadvantages to requiring thick WHOIS for all GTLD registries. In this report, the working group does recognize that this would mean a transition of over 120 million domain name registrations from existing thin registries to from the thin model to a thick model. And as a result, they do recommend that due consideration will need to be given to how such a transition is prepared and eventually implemented. So the working group has published its report for public comment and is now looking for your input on the findings and the recommendations that are contained in the report. Comments may be submitted until the 14th of July, followed by a reply period. The working group would like to point out that due to the closeness of the Durban meeting, the working group will also accept any normal or regular comments that are received during the reply period, which will remain open until the 4th of August. So in addition to that, the working group is also hosting a session in Durban on Wednesday, the 17th of July, between 12:30 and 2 o'clock local time, during which an overview will be provided of the report, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions and provide input. And following the closing of the public comment forum, the working group will review the comments received and revise its report accordingly for submission to the GNSO Council. So here you find a couple of links where you can find additional information, the report itself, as well as the working group workspace, and a link to the public comment forum. So the next topic I'll be covering relates to the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, which is another policy development process that's currently ongoing in the GNSO. So currently there is no requirement to lock a domain name in the period between the filing of the UDRP complaint and the commencement of the proceedings. The UDRP itself only refers to maintaining the status quo, but it actually does not define what that means or at what point of time status quo should be maintained. So this in turn has resulted in different interpretations and practices by registrars, which has resulted in confusion and lack of clarity for all parties involved, registrars, UDRP providers, as well as complainants and registrants. So following the issue report on the current state of the UDRP, the GNSO Council decided to initiate a policy development process on this specific topic only, as a more extensive review of the UDRP is scheduled for a later point in time. As some of you may recall, the working group published its initial report prior to the ICANN meeting in Beijing for public comments. In response to that, 5 community contributions were received. Most of those comments were in support of the recommendations or raised some minor issues. But at the same time, there were also 2 more substantive issues raised, one of which related to the loss of informal response time for a respondent to a UDRP proceeding as a result of a proposed change in the requirement for the complainant to notify the respondent at the time of filing of the complaint. And the other one relates to the process that needs to be followed in the case of a settlement. So since Beijing, the working group has been working hard to review all the comments received and respond to each of them accordingly, and are now in the process of finalizing their report, and they're actually aiming to submit that in time for GNSO Council consideration in Durban. The deadline for submission is 7th of July for documents that need to be considered by the GNSO there. So what is the expected final report to say? And just to note that this is still in draft form and not a final stage yet. Overall, most of the recommendations are actually identical to the ones that were put forward in the initial report, maybe some minor tweaks here and there. But one new recommendation has been added that addresses the issue of loss of informal response time, as I referred to before, in response to the comments that were received. So this new recommendation allows for an automatic extension upon request by the respondent of 4 days to the overall response time. And in addition, the working group is also expected to put forward a proposed process for dealing with the settlement that clarifies the roles and responsibilities of the different parties that are involved in a UDRP proceeding. But overall, again, the intention of all these recommendations is really to clarify and standardize the process for the locking of a domain name subject to the UDRP proceedings by outlining the different roles and responsibilities of the parties that are involved in this. So following its submission to the GNSO Council, as I said, which is expected to happen before or just prior to Durban, the GNSO Council is then expected to consider the recommendations and report and decide whether to approve the report or not. My personal expectation is that such a consideration, I think there will be a discussion and review in Durban, but probably a formal decision will need to wait until after Durban so that there's sufficient time for all the groups to review and consider the recommendations contained in the report. Again, here's some further information to related documents. You'll find a link to the initial report as well as the public comment forum as well as the working group workspace. So with that, I'll hand it over to my colleague, Brian Peck, who will talk to you about the protection of Red Cross, IGO, and IOC, and INGO names policy development process.
Thank you very much, Marika, and hello, everyone. My name is Brian Peck with the ICANN Policy Staff, Policy Director, and as Marika mentioned, we'll spend a few minutes to talk about the update on the current work being done related to protection of the Red Cross, Red Crescent names, the International Olympic Committee, International Government Organization, and other international non-government organization names. Currently, as a result of past board-adopted resolutions, the names of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Movement and International Olympic Committee are on a reserve names list, which basically prohibits the registration of their names, the respective names, at the second level in the new GTLDs. This reserve names list is currently in Specification 5 of all the new GTLD registry agreements. In addition, the ICANN board is in discussions with the Government Advisory Committee, or the GAC, on determining which international government organization identifiers would also qualify to be placed on this reserve names list. Those that will be determined to do so will be also receive the same protections currently being extended to the Red Cross and Red Crescent and IOC names in the new GTLD registry agreements. And these protections are in effect until any other policy development process recommendations are determined by the GNSO PDP working group, which is currently deliberating on this issue. In terms of the GNSO Policy Development Working Group, the GNSO Council initiated a PDP last fall and basically tasked the working group to evaluate and develop policy development recommendations for any additional permanent special protections at the, both the top and second level in all both existing GTLDs and new GTLDs for IGO and INGO identifiers, including both the Red Cross, Red Crescent, and IOC names. The PDP working group has been working since last fall. They recently published their first initial report for public comment on the 14th of June. The public comment is, of course, open right now until July 17th, after which the reply period closes on the 7th of July. The policy recommendations that are listed in the initial report do not represent a consensus position of the working group, but rather list and describe the current policy recommendation options that are being considered by the working group and is seeking feedback from the community to help the working group determine its further deliberations once the public comment period closes. In terms of next steps, the PDP working group will have a face-to-face working group session at the urban meeting on Monday, the 15th of July, local time 1500 to 1700. That is an open meeting, and so members of the public are welcome to attend. In addition, there will be a panel discussion on special protections for IGO and IGNO names in Durban on Wednesday, the 17th of July, 11 to 12:30 p.m. local time, during which there will be an opportunity for the community to learn more about the issues related to this matter, to ask questions about that. And the second purpose of this panel discussion is to solicit and encourage feedback from the community, again, to help the working group move forward with its deliberations in determining policy, a set of policy recommendations for this issue. Once the public comment period closes on the initial report, the working group will review the input received in view of reaching consensus on a set of policy recommendations for the GNSO Council to hopefully adopt and move to the board. Publication of the draft final report for public comment will then take place before any final report is submitted to the GNSO Council. Further information is provided here in terms of the initial report, the public comment box, additional information on the activities of the working group itself, and we certainly encourage the community members to review the initial report and to solicit and provide public comment on these issues. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleagues, Julie Hedlund and Steve Sheng, to talk about the PDP process on the translation and translatization of contact information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. This is Julie Hedlund, and along with my colleague Steve Sheng, as Brian mentioned, we'll be talking about the PDP on translation and transliteration of contact information. First, it's important that people understand the terms we're using here. Translation is the translation of a text into another language. Transliteration is the writing the letters using the closest corresponding letters of a different alphabet. So in Russian, you would say Moskva in the Cyrillic script. In English, it's Moscow. In other languages, it has other names. Transliteration would be Moskva into the Latin script, Mokva, And so those are two terms that are important to understand. And it's also useful to mention that when we say contact information, we're talking about a subset of domain name registration data. That is the information that enables someone using a domain name registration directory service, such as Whois, which was mentioned previously by my colleagues in other issues, allows people to contact the domain name registration holder. So the two issues being addressed in this PDP are, should this contact information be translated into one language, such as English, or transliterated into one script, such as Latin? And also, who should decide? Who would bear the burden, the cost associated, for example, to translate or transliterate that contact information? Our recent developments include a call for volunteers that was issued just last week for a drafting team to develop a charter for the PDP working group that will address these issues. And anybody interested should email the GNSO Secretariat at the address here by July 1st. Related issues are that staff is going to commission a commercial feasibility study on the translation and transliteration of contact information to help inform the working group. And another forthcoming working group will determine the appropriate internationalized domain name registration data requirements, including the relevant outcomes from this PDP. And the next steps are, as we mentioned, the formation of the drafting team to produce the working group charter. The GNSO Council will consider and approve the charter, and then staff will issue a call for volunteers for the PDP working group to form, and the working group will consider the issues that we've laid out here, consult with the community, and produce an initial report. For further information, you see the links here to the motion, to a final issue report on this matter that was issued by the joint GNSO-ESAC working group, and the final issue report that was used to help form and frame the issues being considered under this PDP. And now I would like to turn things over to my colleague Barry Cobb, who will talk about the Whois Survey Working Group.
Great. Thank you, Julie. Yes, my name is Barry Cobb, and I also assist the GNSO policy team with different varying policy efforts. I'll be presenting two smaller efforts for you today. The first is the Whois Survey Requirements, which is an existing effort that's approaching conclusion. And then secondly, I'll also touch upon a new effort starting regarding GNSO metrics and reporting. So starting with the Whois Survey Requirements Working Group. In 2012, this work group was chartered to create a survey based upon a staff report that consisted of 11 possible technical requirements of a future or new Whois system if one were to be designed. The community determined based on that report that it would be good to receive feedback about some of those requirements as to whether they should be implemented or not, and to understand what support they may have. In that time, the working group developed a draft of the survey. They posted it for public comment and received feedback from the community about to improve it, which the working group did. And eventually a final survey was deployed to the community in September 2012. The survey is important in general because it first gave the community an opportunity to provide input on the technical requirements. Not only was the survey a multiple-choice type format, but there were also plenty of opportunities for free-form text to provide specific comments related to certain technical requirements. The results of the survey, we're still figuring that out in terms of the final recommendations, but ideally, hopefully the results can aid in deliberations of larger efforts with respect to domain registration data that are going on today. And one thing of note is that none of this survey was intended to define or suggest any policy with respect to Whois, but purely only technical requirements. So as I mentioned, the survey closed at the end of October last year. Staff has completed a draft version of the final report. And basically some of the high-level numbers that we received well over 200 responses, but only 67 of those were formally submitted through the survey tool. It should be noted that this was definitely not an easier survey that most in the community may be used to. Not only was it very technical in nature, but it was also very detailed as to the questions being asked about each technical requirement that in many cases required a specific skill set to complete that particular question. And given the complexity of the survey, we suspect that that's why there was such a large amount of the responses that weren't formally submitted through the tool. The draft final report that we have is almost near 60 pages, with easily 50 of those being a summary of the analysis that was performed on the question, taking note that the raw data that was being considered was well into 130 pages. So we managed to try to condense that down a little bit and make it much more easier to read and understand exactly the results of each question. There are a few proposed recommendations that I won't get into details right now, other than to know that the working group will be reviewing through some of these recommendations and determining if further recommendations are required and the like. So basically, next steps, the working group will complete its final report. Based on the final recommendations that are agreed upon within the working group, they'll determine whether a public comment period is going to be necessary or not based on these recommendations. Do note that this is a non-PDP effort and, again, does not have any impact on policy. And then lastly, once we get those two areas tied up, we'll submit the report to the GNSO Council for its consideration. Lastly, here's links to a few information sources about the working group's deliberation. The Who Is Working Group has a page on the GNSO website, as well as some of the draft materials that are available out on the wiki. So next, I'll move over to a new effort that is just getting spun up. This is the GNSO Metrics and Reporting Working Group, or eventually will be a working group. And some of you that are more familiar with the ongoings in the GNSO, this may be more familiar to you termed as uniformity of reporting. But the term uniformity was kind of a misnomer, so we decided to retitle this group. Essentially, what's happening is a drafting team is going to be formed to develop a charter to collaborate with the GNSO community on areas of other registrant complaint and abuse data that may be useful to aid the GNSO policy development process as issues are addressed by the GNSO. The working group is likely to review current process documentation, internal as well as external data sources regarding domain abuse and the like, and possibly make any recommendations to enhance any of our current documentation that may facilitate metrics and reporting within the policy process. Recent developments. So as a quick history lesson, the effort was first spun out of a prior working group that used to discuss abuse of domain name registration. You may recall it was labeled as Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, or RAPWG for short. And they recognized during that effort, which was around 2009 and 2010, that access to some of that data was very limited to help inform its deliberation. As such, they created a recommendation that eventually resulted in an issue report that eventually formed this particular effort. At the time of the RAPWG, compliance data was certainly less than optimal, but there the contractual compliance team has made great strides in enhancing complaint intake and meeting many of the reporting requirements that were based on the original recommendation. Given that the first recommendation out of the staff issue report is that that the GNSO Council awaits until the end of the year for contractual compliance to complete their three-year plan in terms of implementing their end-state goal with respect to compliance and the reporting and of the compliance function. Second, the Council also approved the formation of the working group, which is the nature of this presentation. And where we're at today is a call for volunteers has been deployed seeking help from the community to help inform the deliberations of this group. Currently, we've only had four members sign up, and certainly between now and through Durban, we'll be trying to seek and solicit more volunteers. And we're looking for a pretty good broad spectrum of representation across the community to help inform the deliberation. So as I mentioned, once the drafting team gets started, they'll develop a charter for the eventual working group. And then, of course, the working group will get started probably sometime after Durban. And just like the others, here's a couple of links to some prior, some information to some prior efforts with respect to this topic, and look forward to meeting if you decide to join up. And with that, I'll turn it over to Lars, and he'll discuss a few of the other projects that are going on in the GNSO. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. This is Lars Hoffman. I'm also a member of the policy team based in Brussels. And I will be talking very briefly about the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy Part D PDP, which is not only a mouthful, but also the final policy development process in a series of IRCP reviews that started back originally in 2008. The IRCP Part D Working Group had its inaugural session on the 25th of February this year. And since then, the group has sought community input on its six charter questions. The group has identified the efficiency and the effectiveness of the existing Transfer Dispute Resolution Policy, TDRP, as one of the key issues that may require its attention. In this context, the group has reached out so far to dispute resolution providers, as well as registrars and registries, and also ICANN compliance, in order to have an overview of the areas where the existing TDRP works well and where it does maybe less so. As part of this analysis, the community input that the group has received, the group has successfully reviewed the charter questions and is currently in the process of formulating its first recommendations on those questions that appear to be least controversial. As far as the Durban meeting is concerned, the group will meet for a face-to-face working session on Wednesday, the 17th of July. And for all of those of you that are in Durban, very welcome to join and take part in the group's discussions. The agenda and all other information are available on the Durban Master Calendar on the ICANN website. And I would like to end noting that the group expects to produce its initial report in August, and hopes to conclude its work in time for the ICANN meeting in Buenos Aires in November this year. Thank you very much, and I pass on to Marika.
Thanks, Lars. So it's back to me very briefly to talk about policy and implementation. I think as several of you know, this has been quite broadly discussed topic within ICANN, but also within the GNSO. And as a result of those conversations, the GNSO decided to create a drafting team that's in the process of developing a charter for a working group that will be looking at issues that have been raised in this context that are specifically focused or affect the GNSO. The drafting team is in the process of has convened and has already had a couple of meetings. Started the discussions earlier in June, and they're basically identifying the issues that need to be addressed and included in the charter. So what they're currently looking at, some of the items that are expected to be included concern the development of a set of principles that would underpin any GNSO policy and implementation-related discussions, possible recommendations on a process for providing GNSO policy guidance, a framework for implementation-related discussions related to GNSO policy recommendations, a guidance on when something should be considered policy and when it should be considered implementation, and also further guidance on how GNSO implementation review teams are expected to function and operate. The drafting team is aiming to deliver its charter in time for GNSO Council consideration in Durban, which would mean they would need to deliver their charter at the latest by the 7th of July, so they're working really hard to try to achieve that, and have a couple of meetings scheduled next week in order to try and meet that deadline. And here you have a link to their workspace where you can find some further information on what they're looking at. But again, this is an effort that once the GNSO Council adopts the charter, a broader call for volunteers will go out, and anyone interested in this topic will be encouraged to participate in that effort. Another topic that's currently, at least from a GNSO perspective, slightly on hold relates to the purpose of GTLD registration data. It's also a policy development process that was initiated by the board, who requested an initial report on this topic a while back, together with the creation of an expert working group that was also tasked to look at this issue. So from the GNSO side, staff prepared a preliminary issue report that was published for public comment a while back, and we did receive one comment from the ALAC, and that's basically currently in the holding pattern as the final issue report will be prepared following the finalizations of the recommendations of the expert working group. Those recommendations will feed into the final issue report, which will then mark the kickoff for the policy development process by developing a charter and going into the working group phase. As you know, or as you may know, the expert working group has now published its initial report for public comment. So that is a topic where you'll you can expect to see more discussions and updates in Durban. But from a GNSO perspective, as said, the PDP itself will proceed as soon as the final set of recommendations is received, following which the policy development process will proceed. So this basically marks the end of the GNSO section of this webinar. So we'll pause here for a second to see if there are any questions that specifically relate to the topics that have been discussed here. You can either do so by raising your hand in the Adobe Connect room or typing in your questions in the chat. I'll pause a couple of seconds here, but at the moment I don't see anyone raising their hand. Just maybe to note that the GNSO, many updates will be provided by the different working groups during the GNSO weekend session on Saturday and Sunday in Durban. You can check out the GNSO wiki where you find further information on the schedule that takes place. And in addition to that, as noted, there are several workshops and updates scheduled as well throughout the week, in addition to working group face-to-face meetings that are all open for anyone interested. So if you want to see how a working group works in practice, that will be an opportunity to see that there as well.
Sure, but I understood that. Well, you probably saw that.
I do hear someone speaking, but I don't think that's necessarily a question. So if you want to mute your lines if you're not asking a question, and please raise your hand if you are asking a question, or speak up now if you're not in the Adobe Connect but on the phone bridge. Okay, seeing that there are no questions, I think we'll move on to the next topic, which is focus on the CCNSO, and Bart Bosswinkle will cover that for you.
Good day, everybody. I will give you a brief update of some of the topics that the CCNSO will discuss, or at least will are hot topics for the CC community at the Durban meeting. First of all, the CCTLD financial contribution discussions, which is hopefully will reach its conclusion at Durban or just after Durban. The results of the study group on the use of country names, which will publish its draft final report either today or tomorrow. Current status of the IDM-PDP 10th anniversary, as David already mentioned, and some other events and say the status of working groups. First, the financial contributions. As most of you will know, who have been involved at the ICANN meetings for some time. This is, from a CEC perspective, has been quite a contentious issue, and not just between CCTLD community and ICANN, but at the broader community as well. So in 2010, a CCNSO finance working group was established, and its mandate was to develop a model and mechanism for the allocation of CCTLD expenses that ICANN is incurring, and secondly, to propose a distribution model across the CCTLD community. Currently, there is a guideline for these expenses for financial contributions of the CCTLD, but this is from 2007 and hasn't kept up with the pace of the development of ICANN and the broader community. The goal of this working group was to find a model that is that would achieve voluntary, agreed, predictable, and sustainable contributions. And the sustainability is that it will at least last 5 years, so we will not have to revisit this topic over the next 5 years. Now, one of the major developments in the past year since the Prague meeting is that the working group and ICANN staff involved in the discussions and the dialogue moved away from what is called the expense area grouping, which was part of the ops plan and budgets up till fiscal year 2011, into a more a value-based exchange approach. And what this means, I'll explain now. Because the expense area grouping, so the allocation to all the specific groups within ICANN according to a certain model and algorithm, wasn't the tool that the CFO thought was the most appropriate, we had to find a different model. And the model was based on an exchange of values. This in itself is rather vague, but within that model, we had the working group and ICANN staff developed some conceptual value categories. These are specific. These are specifically aimed at CCTLDs. Now, you could say, what you have to think about with this category is secretariat support for the CCNSO and the broader CCTLD community, travel funding specifically for the CCTLDs, and that's about it. It's very limited. The second category that was distinguished and where there is an exchange of value almost, that's the shared category. Again, this is expenses incurred by the ICANN or by ICANN itself, but also by CCTLDs, which are in principle tangible, but not directly accountable or attributable to the CCTLDs, but also to other groups. You have to think of something like meetings, and meetings is a very good example for exchange of value. As you may know, the ICANN meetings are mostly co-hosted by CCTLDs. For instance, the upcoming Durban meeting is co-hosted by the CCTLD manager of .za, Zadna, and the Toronto meeting was co-hosted by CIRA. And then finally, the third category is the global category, and this is more around what both ICANN and the CCTLD community contribute and activities to strengthen the multi-stakeholder model, both at a global, regional, and national level, and which is of value to the full community. So this is the conceptual buckets used to identify potential costs. Now, I will not spend too much time. As with all conceptual models, there are no clear-cut boundaries, as you can see in this slide. So I'll move on. So At this stage, the Financial Working Group and ICANN staff has come to a reasonable understanding of the monetization of the category, so that CCTLD Finance Working Group itself is focusing on the distribution model, which they already discussed at the Beijing meeting and will be hopefully finalized at the Durban meeting. And the current status, as I said, for discussion is the finalization of the exchange model and its monetization, refinement, and hopefully preparation of the guideline. So by Durban, we hope to conclude a very long effort and draining process with the conclusion of some of the contentious issues. The second topic, which I just briefly touch upon, is the results of the study group on the use of country names as TLDs. As I said, the working group or the study group will produce its draft final report during this week. The main observations in this draft final report, and as you could imagine, is that the use of country names as TLDs is a very, very complex area, especially in light of the multitude of languages and script, and also, no surprise, there is no consistent treatment of country and territory names across the CCNSO and GNSO policies. Hence, the working group recommends to the CCNSO to set up a cross-community working group to review the current definitions under the different policies, so both at the CC and the GNSO level, and propose a consistent framework across these different policies in order to create and harmonize the definitions. And until such time, it is suggested that the board will extend the current rule under the new GTLD and applicant guidebook to exclude country and territory names as GTLDs. Current status of IDM-PDP, again, just a brief update. The CCNSO adopted the final report of the working groups in the on the PDP in Beijing. As a result of the PDP of the CCNSO, then envisions a members' vote. The first round has been conducted. Unfortunately, only 65 of the 136 members who were eligible to vote voted, so we did not meet the quorum rule, which says at minimum 50%, so there will be a next round of voting, which is envisioned to take place post the Durban meeting. During the Durban meeting, there will be a discussion at the CCNSO meeting on the voting and what needs to be done to improve it in future. As David already mentioned, in June the 2003, ICANN board adopted Article 9 of the ICANN bylaws, as such creating the CCNSO. So in June, so this month, it's the 10th anniversary of the CCNSO. The main events during the Durban meeting, and the CCNSO Council has set up a special celebration committee, but the main events for the broader community are a panel discussion on the achievement and added value of CCTLDs to ICANN and other stakeholder groups and SOs and ACs, and there will be a CCNSO cocktail on Tuesday evening for the CCTLD community and invited guests. There will be some more CCTLD-focused events as well, but I haven't included them. And finally, some other events and working groups at the Durban meeting is the joint CCNSO, GNSO, IDM working group has published a draft final report on universal acceptance of IDM TLDs. As always, on Monday, there will be a tech day. This is not limited to the CCTLDs, but has a broader agenda and is probably relevant for the future new GTLDs as well, especially the smaller ones. It's on operational and technical issues that for GTLDs in general, and how, and so it creates a more a platform for discussion across the different SOs and ACs. And then the CCNZO meeting on 16 and 17 of July, so that's Tuesday and Wednesday, which are always open. We foresee a panel discussion on cross-regional capacity building. There will be an extended security session with different presentations, and there is a CCTLD news session, so what is happening in CCTLD land. And finally, on Wednesday afternoon, the CCTLD will elect a new chair of the CCNSO, as Leslie Cowley will step down at this meeting, at the Durban meeting. Some background material, and again, if you have any questions, please raise them, and there will be an opportunity at the end of the sessions. Otherwise, I'll hand over to Barbara Roseman to give a presentation on RSEC.
Thank you. This is Barbara Roseman, and I'm the staff support for both the address supporting organization and the Root Server System Advisory Committee. The ASO is not going to be holding a meeting in at the Durban meeting, but they will have attendees from all the regions and will be available for anyone who wants to sit down with them and have a discussion about IP number-related issues. They've recently reappointed Kuo Wei Wu to seat 10 of the ICANN board. His current term will end at the end of the annual general meeting in Buenos Aires and start again at that time, and it's a three-year term. The ASO is also working on identifying rules for IPv4 transfers between the RIR regions. So there are five regions, and each of them has slightly different rules about that govern how IPv4 transfers can work between organizations. And with the runout of IPv4 free pool, they are now looking at ways of facilitating transfers between the regions. And so that's not subject to global policy at the moment, but it is something that they're working on. They're also redefining their operating procedures for the ASO Address Council. This is something that they do periodically to ensure that participation stays lively and that they understand the rules for how they make decisions on the council. There, as I said, there will be five members available on-site in Durban. There will also be members of the NRO, which is the Numbers Resource Organization, and those are generally the CEOs of the various RIRs. There will be an IPv6 presentation done on Wednesday, July 17, and there is an open meeting with the board also on Wednesday in the morning, and that will be on the schedule shortly. For the Root Server System Advisory Committee, they're actually going through a reorganization based on the review that was done of their current form. Their executive committee has now formed. It consists of the 12 root server operators of the named routes and and the three participants in root zone management. And that's the root zone maintainer, which is IANA, the IANA oversight function, which is NTIA, and the root zone publisher, which is VeriSign. They're currently working on defining and publishing their operating procedures, and they're forming the caucus, the RSAC caucus, which will be a large community of DNS experts to work on working groups and other RSAC areas of interest. They will be holding their next face-to-face meeting at the IETF in Berlin, and following this year, at least twice a year, they will meet at an ICANN meeting. This year they will be meeting at the Buenos Aires meeting coming up in November, but we're unable to organize things early enough to attend the Durban meeting. So I think it will be very interesting to integrate the Root Server System Advisory Committee into the normal ICANN policy process, just as FSAC has made a practice of participating in the ICANN meetings more directly. So that is the update for the ASO and for RSAC, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them now. Otherwise, I believe I'm handing this off to David. Oh, I'm sorry, Heidi. Excuse me.
Hi, everyone. My name is Heidi Aldridge. I'm the Director for At Large, and I'm delighted to give you a brief update on the ALAC's policy issues that have taken place between the ICANN meetings in Beijing and Durban, as well as provide a preview of At Large activities in Durban. The first is the highlights of the policy issues being discussed within the ALAC. The ALAC produced 11 policy advice statements in response to open public comments between the ICANN meetings in Beijing in late June 2013. The five most recent policy advice statements consist of the following: the fiscal year 14 draft operating plan and budget, new GCLD's board committee considerations of GAC safeguard advice, an ALAC statement on the proposed final 2013 RAA, an ALAC statement to the board regarding security and stability implications of the new GCLDs, and an ALAC statement on trademark clearinghouse and IDN variants. The policy advice development process that the ALAC uses, including close collaboration with the five regional at-large organizations and over 16 active working groups, ensures that the ALAC statements reflect the views from the edges of the at-large community. More information on all of the ALAC statements is available on the at-large correspondence page and in the monthly policy update. Moving on, are the ALAC and RALO activities since the Beijing meeting? They're actually either currently ongoing or have already taken place. And the first one is the preparation of a beginner's guide on ALAC policy. This guide, which will be presented in Durban, lists the end user perspective on six key policy issues consisting of who is, the RAA, IDNs, ICANN strategic and operating plan, the new GTLDs, and the public interest. And this beginner's guide is the fifth in a series of guides that on topics requested by the ICANN community. The second is that the ALAC regional officer and ALAC voting delegate to the NOMCOM selection process is currently underway. All five of the regional at-large organizations, or the RALOs, have either recently completed or are currently undergoing the selection process for various at-large leadership positions, including ALAC representatives, regional officers, and the ALAC voting delegates to the NOMCOM. And the aim this year was to sync all of the selection processes and have them completed by the Durban meeting, and that is on track to be completed. The third is a series of AFRALO capacity-building webinars. And the context of this is that during the Dakar meeting in 2011, AFRALO held a capacity-building course for their at-large structures. And one of the requests from AFRALO was that these presentations be put onto a webinar. And so we've been doing that since Beijing into three webinars. Two of them have already been held. The first one was on the ICANN mission structure and constituencies. A second webinar was held last week on ICANN's role in the infrastructure of the Internet and ICANN public participation and communication. And the third one is being scheduled for next week on the topic of how you can help shape the future on the Internet. And finally, the RALO activities since Beijing was last week. URALO held a general assembly on the sidelines of the Eurodic conference in Lisbon. This general assembly brought together over 80% of the URALO at-large structures to discuss how to improve URALO's inreach and member involvement and define their priorities. And as you can see in the photo, ICANN President and CEO Fadi Shahadi spoke with the members of URALO and was also the keynote speaker at an outreach reception that was held immediately following the General Assembly. I'd like to just briefly discuss at-large activities being planned in Durban. At-large is going to be holding 21 formal meetings during this meeting. They are going to be meeting with the board, the GAC, ASO, and the ATRT, too, and as well as planning on participating in many of the public meetings that are taking place in Durban. Finally, following on a successful policy roundtable held in Beijing, At-Large will also be holding a public multi-stakeholder roundtable, this time on the theme of new GTLDs addressing consumer and public interest concerns. And that's going to be held Monday, the 15th of July, between 14 and 1600 local Durban time. And finally, AFRALO will be hosting a showcase and reception on the theme of AFRALO, getting closer to the local African end user community. This one's a little bit different. This time it will not only feature key speakers such as Fadi and Steve Crocker, but also bring in a local community academic students and professors, as well as NGO representatives. This AFRALO showcase and reception will be held on Monday, the 15th of July, between 18 and 19:30 in the venue. And you're all very warmly invited to participate in this event. This concludes the ELAC update, and I'm going to now pass this on for questions and then over to David. Thank you.
Are there questions for Heidi in her presentation on the activities of ALAC? We will also be able to add further questions in a moment. I would just like to thank the presenters for their presentations and information, and also to our members online. How to stay updated, of course, we have various recommended ways. The policy monthly that comes out is a very good source of the summary of various activities of the supporting organizations and advisory councils. You've heard some of the topics being raised in greater detail on this webinar. That provides a monthly update for you. And that's also online at the URL seen on your screen. That's delivered to you if you subscribe via email. But another way of doing it rather quickly would be through My ICANN, and we encourage you also to subscribe there with some delay. It first comes out in English. We have it available in the languages that you see on our screen, Arabic, Chinese, French, Russian, and Spanish, to help people keep up to date and understand the policy development process and activities as well as the issues being discussed. The presenters, of course, are part of the policy development support team for the various supporting organizations and advisory committees. A full list is here. You know some of them, and you may be able to contact and meet others at the ICANN meetings, and we'll mostly be in Durban as well. At this point, I'd like to highlight two new members joining our policy team. One is Olaf Nordling, who is really coming back to the policy team. He'll be joining us as a senior director for GAC relations, as our policy team does support the Governmental Advisory Committee in its work, and also a senior policy director in support of the GNSO. Mary Wong will be joining the staff July 1, and will be in Durban. Both Olaf and Mary will be in Durban at that time as part of our team. So with that, I would like to then just ask if there are any final questions on what was presented either within our GNSO section, our CCNSO section, our ASO and RSAC section, or the advisory group updates. We're happy to hear from them now. Either you can raise your hand in the Adobe Connect, or I think the phones are about to be unmuted so that you can speak if you're online. With that, I would also remind people that the slides, the transcripts, and the audio recording of this session will be made available, and we recently put in the chat where that can be accessed after this for your reference. and to replay or reread some of the information we provided. It's there for you and will be posted in a few hours. And, of course, we are repeating this presentation at a later hour to help with people in different time zones. So not seeing any questions, we would like to thank everyone for participation. Thank you for taking your time to be with us to exchange information on the policy development activities we see coming for our ICANN conference in Durban. And with that, I would wish all of you a good evening, good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you may be in our ICANN community. Thank you very much for joining us.